gosh, everybody, we are back. This is the Comedy Fix podcast, a philosophical podcast about comedy, as one of our listeners, Sarah Samuel, said about us. I like that. We like to say we like to peer behind the curtain of comedy and performance and figure out what the fuck is going on. So I'm Chris Alvarado. I'm here with Jamie and Sam, my two good friends. And frankly, it's funny. I call you guys my friends. You are my friends. But some of the listeners who write in say like, oh, I like your debates. I like your arguments. You know, I think that's what good friendship can do, right? You can get in there. So speaking of getting in there, today's a topic, hot topic. Some people are fine with it. Some people do it. Some people despise it. We're talking about breaking during a performance, everybody. You know that moment where the person on stage either finds themselves incredibly funny or finds what just happened incredibly funny, and they start laughing and they break that moment. The moment they smash the veil of performance in theater where we're all suspending disbelief to be in this world, and all of a sudden this person has the audacity to laugh. I'm always that person. Talk to me, gentlemen.
You're breaking right now. You've literally broken right now. He's so smug with himself and he's just eating it himself up. And we're just sitting here quietly waiting for our turn to talk. He's still doing it.
I'm great. I'm funny. I'm great. I'm charming. What can I say?
So breaking. All right. So is it just breaking, like laughing in the middle of a performance? Is it breaking character to step outside of the person you're playing in a scene to revert to yourself or revert to another alter ego? Breaking the show, where you just say, fuck the form, we're doing whatever we want right now, and then the show collapses. Like, breaking can mean all different kinds of things. The breaking you're talking about, Chris, breaking in the middle of a scene and laughing or enjoying it. Gosh, I've seen it done where it's charming and contagious, and then the audience enjoys the breaking. And then I've also seen it where the performers think that they're so in love with themselves that it's like, oh, the audience doesn't love you as much as you love yourself right now. And then it becomes a turnoff. So I've seen both, and I wonder, because Sam, you proposed this topic, so I'm sure that you might have some thoughts on it.
And he's on the podcast.
He hasn't really spoken that much yet, and we'll let him speak in a second, but right now I'm talking. See, now I just broke. I get, what is breaking? Laughing at your own hijinks in a scene? I don't know. Maybe we'll get a definition in a minute, but I really don't know when it's done well and when it's not. I think it just depends on how much the audience is on your side. If they're on your side a lot and they like you as a performer, I think that you can get away with basically anything. But if the audience isn't really feeling you, if they don't really jive with the show or your group or your performance, then they're just going to see that as like, oh, fuck off. I don't know. Sam, any light to shed on this?
Yeah, I love that we are finding another debate where the answer is like, I don't know, sometimes if it feels right, which is fair. I mean, I think for a lot of this stuff, that's what it is. I would also like to add breaking the fourth wall to this, because I think for me, the larger idea of breaking is what Chris is talking about, breaking character. But I also think it's, breaking the illusion in other ways. And what I think is interesting about it is I think actually sometimes it's called for. Or should be incorporated into stuff. I love sitcoms where the characters laugh at each other's jokes. And I think sometimes, like, if you're laughing at something that's funny that's going on, like, you don't have to break character to do that. But I think a lot of people love SNL at times because they do break because they're making themselves laugh so much. And that can be a little polarizing at the same time. I've been told at times that if something controversial comes up and someone mishandles it on stage, you might want to break out of the scene itself and kind of address maybe an awkward elephant in the room. which I think is kind of an interesting idea that maybe we want to break sometimes. And Jamie, I feel like you break everything you touch. Like, there's not a character you've ever played that was consistent. You've never followed any form at any point in time to any level of competency. You love to just totally ruin the amazing illusion of, you know, it's a Friday, Black Friday sale, and we're outside of Best Buy, and you'll just smash that to pieces in front of our very eyes. So when do you feel called to break, and how do you not break the hearts of your collaborators?
So, Sam, I have to say that you're basically my only collaborator. So this is really about you and I, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
That's so funny. For the listeners, Sam brings this up from time to time, the Black Friday scene. It has become infamous between he and I because he tried to establish a Black Friday scene where we were waiting in line and I just said no. I just said no. It was too much context. It was too much context. He was giving me too much context at the top of a scene and drove me crazy.
Yeah, you cannot stand too much context. You cannot stand it. You'll take a little bit, okay, set us up where we're at, whatever. As soon as it goes one step further, I've seen you a million times, like, too much, I'm out.
But I wonder if, in a way, am I breaking reality by being too heavy-handed? Like, in sometimes, some ways. Yeah.
That's sometimes, I think, what puts me off of context in general when I see other people doing it or when I'm in scenes where I feel like there's too much of it, is that I'm like, it just stinks. It just stinks of improv trope. It stinks of improv, you know, I don't know, shortcuts kind of thing. Dude, and I'm like, I don't really Jamie, care for those.
This is one area, and I want to stay on breaking, but just context quickly. Just a quick aside here. I was always a huge proponent of context, especially because I teach a lot. And so it was important for the two improvisers to get on the same page to know who they are, where they are, what's going on, right? Until I started working with you, both of you, pardon me, but of course, Jamie would be like, no, thanks. And that kind of changed my mind on that. Even now, I mean, I teach twice a week. Sometimes the scene is going for a minute and a half and my teacher brain is going, I don't know where we are. I don't know where we are. But then I hear Jamie being like, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, it's going to be fine anyway. And because I've loosened my grip on that, I've found some freedom there. But you know, you want to avoid the bumbling, like, oh, they think we're at a gas station. They think we're at a donut shop. And then the scene can't even get off the floor sometimes. Now for you, I think that would be an invitation even to like explore that world. But you know, that's what we try to avoid. Anywho, I just want to say thank you, Jamie. Thank you for opening. Okay. But really quick.
Guys. Oh, Sam hates this.
Really quick.
Thank you, Jamie, for denying Sam. It's just,
look, there's a million versions of breaking. I guess we just established that, a million definitions. But I want to go back to like the classic. Here's when I learned about breaking. And I think this says something about who you are, how you responded to this. I learned about breaking legit. I mean, I've been doing this for over 20 years, but like in a public way, Jimmy Fallon. He's like a known breaker on SNL. And I realized there were two camps. People that found that charming and people that couldn't stand it. And I was in the couldn't stand it place, even though I constantly broke because I'm usually the least, pardon me, I'm usually the least funniest person on stage. So I'm like having a good time, which is fair. But him breaking, I couldn't take it. And I realized I needed to just do some self-examination. And I think if you're in the camp of people who can't stand it when he breaks, you need to ask yourself, what's wrong? What's wrong, buddy? What's wrong? Because what we're watching is just somebody who's having the best time. Hopefully, that's why we're breaking. Not to be cute, which is what it maybe began to feel like, but somebody who's having the best time and can't contain it, that should be a wondrous moment for all of us. You know, you don't want to ruin a production, I'm sure, of like if you're doing a play or something, but I used to be so mad and I'm not mad at that. So I want to know where you stand on Jimmy Fallon specifically on SNL. I know I'm older than you guys, if that resonates with either of you.
Jamie has zero cultural references, which we sometimes.
Who's Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah. Yeah. So
Jamie Fallon.
I don't even know how to begin to explain it. Saturday Night Live, hopefully, you've heard about.
Rings a bell.
I go to bed at 10, so... no, I actually do. I've never seen any of his sketches on Saturday Night Live, but I do know of the phenomenon of people being pissed by him breaking. Yeah. And that became a thing just because being in the comedy world, you hear about people referencing that. People don't usually bring it up in a good way. So if it gets brought up, it's usually in a bad way. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say I'm part of the bad camp. I was not a fan. If you're having more fun than the audience, which I think is to Jamie's point earlier, and I think what people didn't like about it is they weren't having as much fun. And I think what can happen sometimes is you end up with a really hot audience, or you're just sort of like in this group mind bubble as a team, and this one thing that you think is really funny just isn't translating elsewhere. And that's what I think happened to him a couple of times. But sorry, Jamie, I interrupted.
I agree with that. And I think that something I didn't articulate earlier, but I think breaking, if one performer is doing stuff and trying to break the other, and the other person breaks based on the original person's performance, I think that's a fun break. But when you're breaking because of your own line or your own thing, I think that's when it's like, oh, this person just loves what they're doing. So I think
that's a great distinction.
I think when Sam does something and I break, I think that's more enjoyable than if I do something and I break.
And I think in the Jimmy Fallon scenario, he was often with like Horatio Sanz. Those two had like a really, you know, buddy connection there. When I look at those episodes now, I think he's having a good time. You're right though, Jamie. You're right. Cause I've also been the fucking person. Listen, I'm a notorious breaker. And forever I thought it was cute too. I was just like, well, I just think it's funny. That's fine. And I remember one of my instructors, unfortunately, I don't remember which one, but said like, hey, when you do that, that just proves to me that you're not fully invested in this character that you're trying to create. It tells me that you had a thin attachment to this character. So you're not actually grounded in anything. This character doesn't have a point of view. If Chris Alvarado, the actor, can laugh so easily that I'm not fully in there. I agree with that in principle. The problem is you try being on stage with some of the people I'm on stage with. They're just too funny. It's especially in improv. In these quick scenes, you know, sometimes it's the weird response, the unexpected response that just, I don't know. And it's fun. But I do think you can break too much. You can break too much.
Yeah. And I think you're right to sort of say that improv is maybe different from, you know, other kinds of entertainment. Like stand-ups don't necessarily have this kind of a thing. They can kind of break in and out of character. They can laugh at their own stuff. And that's part of the enjoyment. Like you're enjoying when they like laugh so hard at something they're about to say. Scripted stuff, on the other hand, I think it's a lot harder if you're sort of the one breaking in that situation, right? Like maybe if you get one take kind of a thing. But one of my favorite things ever was the woman who played opposite Robin Williams in Mrs. Doubtfire when he goes to interview for like the unemployment office or whatever. And he just goes through like a run of 30 characters. And apparently half of it was improvised. And the poor woman said she had to like pinch herself the whole time just so that she couldn't like ruin every take by laughing at it. It's so funny. So it is interesting to put it in different contexts of, well, it's okay if Sam puts on something really heavy handed and Jamie breaks it for the audience because they'll enjoy that. Or I think, Chris, you were kind of saying like the challenge when SNL is trying to make someone break, when they've clearly held up a cue card that the person has never seen before, and part of the fun is like they're seeing it for the first time and that's what's making them laugh. It's interesting to think there's maybe an art to this breaking.
I think that's particularly true, yeah, with improv, because it's fresh for us, you know, just like it is for the audience. So if the audience finds it funny, chances are the performers also find it funny, and it's also fresh for them, theoretically, because they didn't see it coming either. So, yeah, I don't know. If you have to say yes or no to breaking character, and I'm going to pin you down to a one yes or no position with no other justification behind it. Sam, yes or no to breaking? Is it okay?
Ooh, because we were also only talking about breaking for laughter.
And breaking for laughter right now, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, if you can avoid it, try to. But of course, we're all human. It's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, then you need to find funnier people to play with.
Chris, yes or no?
Yeah, life's too short to hold. Life's
I said no justification. I said yes or no.
Yes. Yes to
yeah, okay.
Well, we're breaking your rule. We're breaking your rule.
That's we haven't gotten to that yet.
And how about you, Jamie?
I would say no. I would say try to make your fellow performers break, because that's a good way. That's a good mentality to have as a performer, but try not to break into laughter yourself, because chances are it's not going to read well to the audience, and I think it might turn them against you.
Is it a good edit point in improv? Like, if you get to such a height that your partner has made you break, is that like just run across the stage at that point in time?
Maybe. And yeah, maybe, you know, but I'm also thinking about, and it sounds kind of like, I don't know, masturbatory or something, but I've also been in situations where I'm holding in the break and the audience is loving it. And I'm really not trying to sell anything to them. I'm just genuinely like, oh, that got me. The audience can see it got me, but we're in the middle of the scene and I'm trying my best. Or the old kind of quick upstage, you look upstage real quick, and come back, you know, and the audience sees your eyes are watering. Look, that's just fun. And that's not me in this example, that's not me trying to pull focus or trying to be cute. It's just when you get got, that's a fun moment. And it's even fun for your performer. It's not fun, however, if a person is such a weak improviser that they don't have their own voice and they just stand there as almost an audience member. Like I've done a lot of student shows where two people, one is trying to do a scene, the other is just kind of watching and laughing on stage. Like, it's not that funny. This is more like a nervous laughter, or you're just watching the show from within the scene. That's not great. Hmm.
Well, that's breaking part one. Sam, what type of breaking would you like to discuss next?
Well, you said we hadn't gotten to breaking the rules, but that certainly seems like...
Oh, we got to breaking the rules in episode two.
Oh, that's true. That's true. We're not counting episodes, though. Breaking the fourth wall, I think, is interesting, because I think that's...
Is that going meta? Is that what people refer to when they say going meta? Because I hear meta say derisively a lot.
Well, I mean, I think when we talk about breaking in general, I think what we're talking about is breaking the illusion, right? And so, like, that's what happens when you break character. You're breaking the illusion of the character. When you break the fourth wall, you break the illusion of the show itself. And, yeah, I would say there's a polarized two camps in improv, probably, where some people think meta is good, and other people say, well, we should maybe like not have too much meta stuff. Probably like a sprinkling of meta.
Well, our first guest, Chad, will you guys say his last name for me? I always have a hard time with that.
Damiani.
Damiani. I want to say Damiani. Okay. Well, Chad said that's his number one thing. He said, Harold or not, whatever he's doing, he's breaking that fourth wall as soon as possible, which I think is interesting, right? It's part of how he wants to perform, how he's going to connect with the audience. So like for him, that's a rule. And I was not shocked, but I was like surprised to hear that somebody would lock that in so hard. Like, one of my things, I'm going after the audience. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's very clown. Right. And again, I think we might see like different art forms have stuff. When you're doing an improvised musical, I would see that as a situation where you necessarily might not want to play too much to the audience. Or if you are playing to the audience, you're doing it within sort of the bounds of the musical, if that makes sense.
Why?
You know,
why does the musical have special rules?
Because in order to... I would say this, and look, I'm sure that there are some very great meta improvised musicals, but as far as like an improvised show goes, a musical has to create some suspension of disbelief. We have to believe that this is the world where characters will sing, right? And so the second that you kind of step out of that too much, you know, and certainly I've seen great improvised musicals where they'll make comments on the action kind of a thing, but like if you break that, now the audience is like, all right, it's all kind of fake. As opposed to what you really want to do is be carried along. I think there are a lot of other forms too. An improvised movie, I think it can be really hard. Although part of that can be breaking the fourth wall and talking to the audience in like stage description. But I would think story narratives in general it would be less supported. But I could be wrong. I could be very wrong.
Well, I have two thoughts. One is it breaking if it's part of the deal, part of the form? If throughout this piece, we know we're going to break from time to time to comment on action or talk to the audience, then it's not necessarily, even though you're breaking the fourth wall, quote unquote, the fourth wall is almost behind the audience. It's almost like the audience is included in the show. Do you know what I mean? Like the only way you'd break the fourth wall in that case is if you stepped outside the theater and started talking to somebody on the street. Sometimes the talking to the audience, even some of the meta moments are kind of built into the piece. And so it doesn't feel so much like breaking. It's just like, oh, this is part of what I'm seeing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's tricky. And again, I have like a sitcom background. So I'll think of like sitcoms where you're never breaking that wall. Right? Like you are engaged in that story the whole time. If you were doing an improvised 90s sitcom show, it would be like, unless, I mean, there are exceptions, right? Saved by the Bell breaks the fourth wall like that. But for the most part, those sorts of shows didn't have someone turn out to the audience and make a comment. I think you're right. There is stuff like improvised movie where part of the form is I'm going to tell you what this looks like, which does technically sort of break that fourth wall. So that's a very fair point.
Well, even improvisers who come out, say hi to the audience and get a suggestion, that's breaking the fourth wall, right?
Yes, and we can have mixed feelings about that.
What are the mixed feelings?
Well, I mean, I'd say a couple of things. I think one, you know, you often have shows where someone might come out in costume and sort of welcome the audience there. So I think there are ways that you could separate it a little bit more and sort of keep a more illusion kind of a thing. Also, who says we need to get suggestions for an improv show? Who says that we need to tell people that it's an improv show? Why don't we just do a show? And maybe that's a better metric of if it's a good show or not. But I digress.
Believe me, I love that. Sam and I have, I think we started getting suggestions from the audience, and we tried to like come up with interesting suggestion getters to prompt different things. At one point, we were asking for a number. And the number really didn't mean that much. Maybe it would get dropped one time in the show. And then I think towards the end of our live performance run pre-pandemic, we weren't even getting it. We would literally just come out and start in the middle of a scene, which I think was so much more fun. And I think catches the audience a little off guard because they're used to like, oh, okay, here are the performers. They're going to greet us. They're going to welcome us. They're going to tell us to tip the waiters and waitresses. They're going to give us the whole spiel. They're going to ask for a suggestion. They're going to thank us for the suggestion. They're going to walk to the back line while they stare at the ground. And then they're going to turn around and be in the character. It's like, no, boom. And I think that's fun. It's fun to change it up.
Though, you know, coincidentally, you know, one of the most popular improv shows of all time is TJ and Dave. And they're famous for saying, this is all made up. Like they don't, although there still is a moment to the audience. So there, maybe there is a little difference, but they don't ask for a suggestion. They just say, believe us, this is all made up. I was thinking of another moment too, where breaking might occur from the performance side of like, I'm thinking of the times I've broke or have seen people break. It's that moment where let's say it's being done to you, where a teammate kind of, and this is a term that, I don't know if we have a better term for it now, but what we call pimping in improvisation, where you're asking your fellow teammate to do something they might not want to do, might be embarrassing to do, might be like a difficult physical task. Again, I'm sure there's a better term for that these days that just was used to. And it was kind of a negative moment can be, depending on the relationships with the improvisers. A quick example of pimping might be like if I'm doing a scene with you two, and as soon as Jamie walks in, I say, oh, here's the guy that always sings how he feels, like endowing some type of trait on you that now you have to like do this. So I've seen, and I've been the person who breaks in that moment, in that space between when the pimp occurs to when I'm about to do the action that's called for. In there, I might like look to the audience or be like, good grief. I'll say this with you. So I've spent a lot of time there, like kind of laughing or looking at the audience, like I'm going to do this thing now. It's silly. But Jamie and Sam, I was always impressed in rehearsals when a moment like that might occur. I'm thinking of singing specifically because I'm so afraid to sing in shows. Jamie, I've seen you just step up and sing full songs multiple times, and you don't have, there is no moment between Sam, again, there's got to be a bit, let's say Sam asking you to do the action and you doing the action. You just do it. To me, that's a really impressive moment because I think, especially in the improv world, we kind of allow the performer to take that moment before they jump on, you know?
Yeah. I think that with Sam's and my performances, a lot of times they're about, they often feel like a topsy-turvy power struggle or like what's between us. And so a pimp, when you pimp out a fellow performer, is the pimper is the one kind of taking power. And I'm going to put this person on their heels. I'm going to make this person feel uncomfortable and make this person look like a fool. And so if that ever occurs, the response to that is like, I got this, meaning that that person tried to take power and I wouldn't allow it by fulfilling the alleged vulnerability without worry and like, okay, what's next kind of thing. So to me, between Sam and I think that's kind of the dynamic that happens, is that I won't, and Sam too, because I've pimped Sam out a million times to do things and he's done it flawlessly. So it doesn't feel like that's a shift in power. And I think that's kind of a fun, it kind of breaks the normal improv thing that you're referring to, Chris, where it's like, oh God, I have to hop on one foot for the rest of the show, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it kind of is like, okay, fine, here, pimp me. Great. Done. Next. And how's the scene going? So, right. So it's kind of fun to like have that be an anticlimactic moment. Cause normally it's like, oh exactly. Shit, he's going to have to sing for the rest of the show. It's like, that's yeah, right.
Got
it's
it. No
big deal. Yeah. Even if it is a big deal, cause I don't like singing, but yeah. I'm not gonna be won over by that.
Excuse me. Yeah, I think Jamie made a great point where it can be fun when it's anticlimactic. You know, I've been in a situation where I said there was something I didn't want to do on stage, and I got sort of endowed into it. And then it became a question of, do I break the scene or do I break this thing that I set for myself, right? And I think that's one of those moments where maybe some of the team is breaking a little bit because like they're in on an inside joke that the audience isn't part of. And that's definitely one of those weird moments where you're like, it's kind of got like weirdly uncomfortable up on stage. I don't quite know what's going on. That person doesn't seem to want to do the thing they're making them do. But then at the same time, I think one of the challenges when you are in those situations and you don't want to do the thing is how can you get out of it? And I actually think breaking is sometimes your only option there. Like you either have to like break character or break the scene somehow, or sort of take it to the next level where it becomes personal. I'm even thinking of what's the team, Wicked Fucking Queer, where they're a bunch of like drunks from Boston is kind of the joke.
Dirty Water.
No, I thought it was Wicked Fucking Queer. I saw them like St. Patty's Day a couple years ago at UCB. Okay, okay. Nate Cordry's part of it. And like the premise is that they're a bunch of like Boston townies who are here to do an improv show, but they're bad at improv. And this is something like great improvisers kind of can do, right? Is they can play a show in character, but then those characters kept kind of breaking the improv they were doing. But the improvisers never broke the South, like Boston characters. So like in some ways it had kind of, was able to maintain that illusion. I forget how I got there, but it's connected. I'm sure the listeners will figure it out.
Oh yeah.
Rewind and listen again if it didn't make sense.
They're ahead of us. They know where we're going. So why does if we can say like breaking the fourth wall or addressing the audience, I hear people, you know, they often call that meta, going meta. And that often has a bad association with it. Why? Help me understand. Let's understand these people's perspective to the extent that maybe we don't agree with that. Why do people, what's the downside of going meta and addressing the audience?
My instinct is that going meta is almost too easy. It's easy for the performers because now they don't have to act anymore. They get to just be themselves. And it kind of cheats the audience out of a show, especially if it's super meta, where it's something, say, that was brought up in the green room before the show. And now the cast is like breaking or mentioning something that only they would know. And so these issues happen at I.O. a lot, because at I.O. and a lot of theaters, of course, is the type of theater where when you improvise, you don't use each other's names, real names. Whereas UCB, you do use each other's real names all the time, even if they're playing a character. So that was always a weird thing for me when I would play at either place. Like, oh, wait, you're calling me Chris, but this is UCB, so you still think I'm the doctor, Chris. Where at I.O., if somebody said Chris, I knew we were going meta. Right. So to me, where it becomes negative is when it's just self-serving. We're pulling out of the piece for whatever reason. It's usually, I think that's the thing. It's usually not a good enough reason to go. There's usually not a good enough reason to go meta. I don't know where I'm going. Here's what I'll say. I never walk off stage after a meta moment being like, hell yeah, we did it. It always feels like, that was a little weird part. That was kind of for us. We're kind of winky winky at each other, but I don't think it made for a greater performance. That wasn't very eloquently said, but hopefully it gives you guys a place to go.
No, I think you're right, Chris. I mean, I have like a purity instinct where it's just sort of like the harder thing to do is to stay committed and make it great. And right. And I think it's kind of the same reason that you say yes and in a scene is like you're saying yes and to the show. Like the show is real and it's happening. When you say no in a scene and you stop that building, or you say no to the show, like, no, this is just fake right now. I think it's possible to sell it out a little bit. I also think there are ways to go meta that don't necessarily break the show in the same way. And I've done it a couple of times with my sort of like UCB practice group where like we did the third beat of a Herald. It was on game and meta. And those are actually very satisfying to me because we're not saying no to what's come before. We're using the fact that this is an illusion and we're playing to it. I'm a huge Shakespeare nerd. Shakespeare does this all the time. Every time we're like, someone has to be an actor, or like we're calling someone an actor. It's like you have those like two levels of reality where it's true to the spirit of what's going on, but it's also true to what's going on stage. And I think that's very different from, yeah, those moments that are a little weird, we have to call ourselves out just because it is weird and we want to acknowledge that, or we're doing something that's more for ourselves and for the audience. And I think that's what gives meta the bad rap. It's, no offense, the Clubhouse montage that knows it's a Clubhouse montage that I think people fight against. I think people love a lot of meta comedy.
Hold on, when it's done will well. You explain what you meant by that?
People
who aren't in Los Angeles.
That's fair. There's a place in Los Angeles that is called the Clubhouse, where I've been lucky to get a lot of stage time and a lot of fun shows are held. But it's a sort of place with a very low bar of entry. And so the criticism of it could be that you end up with a lot of, frankly, like youngish improvising teams who are just sort of doing a bunch of scenes together in a montage and they're uncomfortable about it, or they're new enough that, you know, a lot of times they might sort of break and call attention to their thing. Or on the other hand, and this is my least favorite thing I'll see there, is someone who's super seasoned as an improviser who's kind of like over it a little bit. They like, they're three beats ahead of the scene they're in because they've just done it 1,000 times before. And they're sort of putting themselves at a distance. So I've probably seen it both ways there.
Yeah, so going meta, I'm trying to articulate my thoughts as I'm having them. And I think that the unattractive part, maybe there's a way to do it that I haven't seen done well, but the unattractive part about going meta is I think it gets used as an excuse not to perform. And I think when Sam and I go meta or break the fourth wall, it's still a performance. I still might be Jamie, but I am still performing and committed to the show as a whole. I may be breaking the character, but the character, they're meant to be broken. That's fine. But you also have to be like, oh, it's you can't go meta and then drop the ball. If you go meta, keep the ball in the air, just address the audience while you're keeping the ball in the air. I think that's how I feel about it.
I like that. I like that because I'm thinking of all the times I've gone meta or I've broken character. It's always been from a place of fear, if I'm being honest. It's always been an eject button. I'll make a move. It doesn't get the response I thought it would. And I'll look to the audience and I'll shrug and that'll get a laugh, right? I've done that a lot, too much. And that's my own insecurity. That's my own, I can't just live in this moment. I can't just like, okay, it didn't hit. No. My ego or whatever it is, I get so afraid of those moments that I will often break. I mean, that was, you know, there's this exercise. Geez, I felt like improv rehearsals don't even happen anymore. Pardon me, Herald specific rehearsals don't happen anymore. But I did the Herald for a long time. And there was one exercise you would do where you would, it seems it's kind of dangerous, where people would perform as somebody else in the cast. And you would have to kind of either guess or they would tell you, okay, you're going to perform as Chris. And one of the things people would do with me a lot would be break or look to the audience. And it's weird when you watch it because you go, oh, I didn't realize I did that so much. And so I certainly don't do it from a place of power because I think it's just fun. It's always me being scared. So Jamie, like you're saying, when you have the wherewithal, like when you know why you're doing it, like when you're doing it with Sam, but it's still part of the performance, there is a place of power. By power, I just mean like you're having fun with it as opposed to me. I'm hitting the eject button. Everybody still like me. I'm okay, right? I know that didn't get a laugh, but hey, I mean, I'll sit down on the stage. I'll stop the show, for goodness sakes. A piece that has momentum, hopefully, and look to someone in the audience and be like, eesh, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. You think that would have hit? And it gets like it gets a laugh. I get to have my ego kind of, you know, like served, and then, but it kind of fucks the show, or it can fuck the show. So I'm a bad performer.
I think it's because, yeah, when you step outside the scene and then comment on the scene, I don't think there's anything wrong with that in principle. But I think sometimes it gets used to judge the scene. And I think the audience then gets uncomfortable with the performer who's judging their own work. That's it's just an uncomfortable position to have an audience be in. Because like, oh, I mean, we knew that wasn't good. But now the performer is also like really upset about it. Now I just feel uncomfortable and I'm not ready to laugh anymore.
I've spent so much time there, Jamie. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's like the person out in the real world who's like, yeah, I know. I know my shoes are ugly. They say that before anybody has said anything about anybody's shoes. And it's like a defense mechanism. And I think that can make an audience uncomfortable. Maybe there's a way to do that in a fun, charming way. I'm sure there is.
Can I say though, can I say just really quick, is that when I'm thinking about the Chris that used to do that, I'm looking back at like the years I spent at IO. Because I might do that today, but I don't play from a place of fear anymore. And I keep thinking about this fear thing. I think about your shows. And here's what I'm trying to say. There was a time when either it was true or I believed it to be true, where improv was like, okay, or I believed it was true, was very important to me. And every show really mattered. We talked about training centers. I don't know which episode, but like, I wanted to come up through the ranks. I wanted to be on the small team that led to the big team, to the main stage. So it wasn't like the way you guys perform, which is just like kind of for the audience, for yourselves, another episode we dealt with, but it was very, for me, presentational. Hello, welcome. Now let us perform this Herald for you, where we will be many different characters, explore many different worlds, and we will tie these all together at the end. Good night. A lot of expectation on myself. I'm imagining from the audience. So fuck, it wasn't until much later in my improv career where I got to kind of like feel okay with the pace at which I want to play or say the things I want to say, do the things I want to do. I was always fucking scared. So of course, when a moment came up where they asked me to sing or something missed, like I was like fucking defeated, like genuinely defeated. It wasn't just like a cute moment for me. It was like, oh fuck. I don't know. I just think of like all those years of playing from a place of fear are different from where you guys play today. Did you guys ever play from that place of fear where you would bail and shit? I would bail all the time.
Yeah.
No, great. Cool. No, just
no, no, certainly. Certainly, like, in those first couple years where you're still trying to get your legs underneath you on stage and stuff. But I think that that's why I have my, not war against training centers and teaching improv, but that's kind of why I push back against it so much, is because it kind of misled me for years. And I allowed myself to be misled because I didn't know any better until I did. And then I turned against it. But that's what training centers do, is they kind of set a correct answer. This is what performance looks like. This is what a herald is. This is how we yes and, you know, they kind of set those rules where if you don't push back against it, you will just buy into it. And if you don't do that well, then you're a bad performer. Then you feel bad. Then you feel pressure to do things somebody else's way. And that's not what improv is to me. Improv is doing it your own way, which, so now I don't feel any of that.
Sure.
But it took me a while to make peace with the fact that, oh, all of these different training centers and teachers and schools are not teaching you improv. They're teaching you a style of improv, but they don't get presented that way. They just say, oh, we're going to teach you improv. And that's not true. They're teaching you a style of it. And it gets confusing when you conflate those two, when in fact, they're very different. And so it took me a while to try to find my own improv style and not just adopt another teacher's or performer's. Because you want someone to enjoy your performance. You want the teacher to say, good job. Or that was really funny. Or you want the audience in the classroom to laugh. But like, gee, then it sets up bad incentives, because then you don't go explore something else.
But I've been doing improv for, I think it's like 23 years now. And I'd say 19 of those years were spent playing that way. Like the way I thought they wanted me to play. Because like you're saying it took you a while, but I'm thinking it's taken me. When I started, you were a baby. You were a cute little blonde baby just running
still
around.
Still am.
it's just crazy how long it took me to come into this. Anyway, I feel like we're going off topic.
We're off. Sam, bring us back.
We're there. We're there. I mean,
we're there.
I think what's... I'm trying to think of when I bailed early on, and I'm sure I did. I just can't necessarily think of something. And I think part of that was, for me, for a long time, my focus was, how can I get into the zone as this character? Like, I really wanted to believe in that character and be that character. And I had such a struggle being convincing at that and just sort of being a good actor that way, that for me, my challenge wasn't, you know, that I would bail on something. It was like, how can I get into it enough? And then I think what I've learned working with Jamie is that I can still have that level of focus and play and acknowledge that there's an audience there. And for me, that's also part of the difference here from some of this breaking stuff, is when it's broken for you as the performer, like when you're the one who's broken out of it a little bit, that's when it's tough. It's like, if you can still have that performance idea, I love that you sort of said that, Chris, if it can still be a performance, then maybe we can have a little bit more fun while we play with this stuff. But once we've broken the performance itself, and look, some people do this with clothing, right? It's like when you walk on stage in shorts and flip-flops, like you're kind of breaking the performance for me a little bit. I'm like, okay, so it's that show, which is fine. It's just, it's making a statement. As opposed to, you know, people who get up there and they're dressed all in black and you're like, okay, like at least they thought about it a little bit. Like, I don't think about it, right? It's just, we're into it. So that's an interesting
Sam,
description.
Somebody who coached you outside of Folly, your work with Jamie, mm-hmm. You're right. You don't bail. And I think I would see you spending your time trying to do your best to get into it, which is really cool, actually, now that I think about it, because it's very easy for me to think my fucking struggles are everybody's struggles, but that wasn't your case. You didn't bail. And I just want to say kudos to you for that. You know, really nice.
Well, see, you're such a great actor. You didn't have to focus on the acting.
Ah, right. What about that, Sam, like you're saying, what about when you break in your head, where you become very aware of what's going on? That's a weird moment where, well, especially for me, I always kind of approach the improv from the uber actor side. Like, ideally, I would be the character and stuff, whatever. And there's that moment where I would get taken out of it. Now, the audience might not know, but I'm like, oh, fuck. that's a weird moment. That's a weird moment where you're watching yourself do the show as opposed to just listening, responding, the old improv, you know, building this wall together where you're out here. That's a weird moment.
You don't want to recognize that you're doing a duck walk, which I think we mentioned before. Like, it happened one time in a scene where I'm just like walking like a duck on stage and it is not working. And I'm aware of it. And I feel like you were kind of aware that I was out of it.
Yeah, that's the difference. Hard. It's hard. We talked about that, right, Jamie? I mean, we talked about that a lot in our rehearsals. Like, what the hell is that? Is that untangible, if that's even a word, difference between me, the audience, not knowing, like, judging whether or not a move is working, and also us being able to tell that you know it's not working, even though you're just still doing the same silly duck walk. There's this weird energy where I could feel you weren't in it, so we weren't in it, even though it doesn't look any different necessarily, like the movement. That's a weird moment.
I think it's the context in which it came. If it's an inspired move, if there was something related to a duck earlier or something inspired that move rather than just a need to have anything, because then it feels forced. And I think the audience is aware that, oh, this feels forced. This performer just kind of pulled this out of nowhere and is trying to do something funny or to do something interesting or whatever. And if it's not inspired or organically built upon or organically arrived at somehow, then I feel like that's when it lacks the authority from the audience. It's like, oh, you're trying to make this funny,
of course,
as opposed to, oh, great, the duck is back, you know?
Yeah, but okay. But sometimes, I'm thinking of you specifically, will be inspired by something I don't know where the inspiration's coming from. So it, for all intents and purposes, it looks to me like it could have been a forced move, except there's a different energy behind the way you are making that move because you were actually inspired to make that move. So that's weird to me that the audience can read that force, that kind of...
I don't think so. I mean, if you just think about being a human being, we are incredibly perceptive. You can walk into a room and get a vibe without anybody speaking to you, right? So, you know, I think Chad actually mentioned this, is that we underestimate how perceptive an audience is. An audience can pick up on it like that.
Yeah,
and so we try to just pretend that they can't because we weren't signaling in big, bold moves to them. But, you know, they're not. They're much more subtle than we give them credit for.
But I think I completely agree with you. And we've had this conversation before, actually. I guess as a 41-year-old man, performer, actor, I'm still a little shocked that that's true. I think because I watch so many people do so many great and inspired moves that I thought the audience wouldn't know the difference if I tried to do that in a later show. Like, but you're right. Like, it wouldn't work. It would feel shitty. But I'm like, how do they know the difference between me being inspired by this or me just making this move? But they fucking do. And it's taken me my whole life to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes to believability, and we could have like a whole episode talking about that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I have a lot to say about believability.
Breaking.
Well, I don't know. I mean, in the last couple minutes, I think we have one untouched breaking subtopic that Sam mentioned, which is breaking within a scene when, you know, Sam tries to set up a big Black Friday scene. And it immediately gets shot down as a terrible idea.
But explain to me how that's breaking. Like, what subcategory of breaking is this?
I guess it's the breaking of denial of the reality of the scene, where I'm not yes-anding Sam's Black Friday choice. I keep wanting to say Big Friday. Black Friday choice. And so maybe that goes under the category more of denial, but it does feel like a break of a sort.
Yeah, break reality. Yeah,
breaking reality. I like that. I like
that. Yeah. Okay. And to me, I'm a fan. I'm a fan. I want to be in scenes that feel like they have something real. Like I don't want to just yes and, because yes anding, I don't know, can lead you into boring territory. If I'm not feeling something from a performance, not just with Sam, but in any performance, if I'm not feeling genuinely inspired based on another performer's move, I don't want to just yes and it blindly. If it's, you know, If somebody says, oh, we got these apples on sale on Tuesday. Like, I don't want a yes and that. I'm not interested in yes anding that. So I'm just like, I don't care. And just move on to something. And ideally, performance would be genuinely inspired based on the other performer's moves. I don't know. I guess I shouldn't have opened this huge can of worms in the last 3 minutes of a podcast. But I just wanted to say that because Sam addressed that earlier and we hadn't got to that.
Yeah, I mean, what I think you do in that moment is you break the fictional reality and kind of reassert the performance reality, right? When I say it's Black Friday and you say, no, it's not, the thing that you're saying yes to is this is a performance on a stage. And so then I think it kind of goes back to some of that meta stuff we were talking about earlier. And so then I have to sort of say, yes, it is a performance and drop my Black Friday and now sort of try to ham fist in something about it being Christmas at a Chinese restaurant. And then you can deny that. And look, all of a sudden we've got two beats of a game. We're off to the races.
And how fun is that? We have, our game is so fucking meta that it's about being meta. That's great. Well, I guess that wasn't really worth bringing up in the last couple minutes of the podcast, but
no, not really.
No, it wasn't really, but that's okay.
It wasn't a good idea.
It was a terrible idea. And
you look, do you want to try again? You want to bring up a different topic we haven't gotten to?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about whether knowledge can exist in a postmodern America.
All right, guys. So please keep reaching out to us at The Comedy Fix on Instagram.
Look, he's breaking again. He can't even get through his outro.
Yeah, and that part I think I was breaking for you guys because I was like, oh, maybe they're worried that I didn't hear Jamie make that move, and then I went ahead with ending the show. I think. I don't know. Ooh, that'd be fun. If every time you broke or you bailed, someone has to go, why? Why?
Just point at you in your face.
Because sometimes it would be like, honest and genuine, like, oh, I got nervous. But sometimes it'd be like, thought it'd be cool.
Oh, I love that, Chris. I think you finally, that was the answer we were looking for.
That's it. You fixed it.
Thought it'd be cool. Listen, I keep mentioning this, but it is so fun to hear from everybody who reaches out to us with their thoughts on these episodes. We keep hearing that people are talking to us back while they're listening, which I love, which means that you feel like you're part of the conversation. I just love that. We are no experts. We're here just to toss these ideas around. And it's really nice to know that you're listening, everybody, and you're also coming up with your own ideas, probably better ideas. So continue to reach out to us at The Comedy Fix on Instagram. You can check me out at Chris Alvarado Instagram. And if you want to take an improv class with me, how about chris-alvarado.com?
Yeah, that's well said. I would love to know what listeners want to hear us talk about. If anybody has suggestions of topics we haven't covered yet, oh my God, I would love to debate the merits of anything. So yeah, feel free to send us in some questions, some thoughts, some provocations that would be welcomed by me. And I'm sure all of us. You can find me at Jamie Parkinen at Instagram, and I'm on Facebook as well. Sam, bring us home.
You can find me at The Sam Miller on Twitter. And if you want me to teach you a class, just tweet at me.
Wow, love that.
Yeah, whoa, you're welcome.
He'll teach you anything.
I mean, it could be he's knowledge a tutor. In postmodern America. It could be about duck walking. I have a lot of expertise.
Thank you, everybody.